QSC, QSC, QSC. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday Net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. 147.330 megahertz, offset of 600 kilohertz, and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club for the use of the repeater for this net. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Hearing none, are there any bulletins announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. Alrighty, only announcement that I have is for everybody who is interested in upgrading their amateur radio license or know somebody who wants to take the tech test. We will be having a testing session on the 29th, which is the last Sunday of this month, at 1 o'clock at the Big Bear Lake Fire Department. If you have any other questions, my email with the ARRL is down right now. Just go ahead and contact me through Tom Fry 2011 at charter.net, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. And a topic that we're going to have this evening, we'll be discussing a little bit about SWR meters and efficiency of antennas and just some general matchup talk of stuff like that. Before we get into any depth this summer, where we'll start pulling apart the transmission lines and antenna feeds and balance mechanisms one by one. So, anyway, I will now call the roster for Tech Tuesday. First on the list, WB6CLZ Mike Placentia.
Good evening, Tom. KF6Q and the Tech Tuesday Net, WB6CLZ. We're standing by.
Okay, Mike. Glad to hear you out there. How about Cindy, WB6CIN?
Good evening, Tom. This is WB6CIN. Looking forward to tonight's topic.
Okay, Cindy. Appreciate that. KA6CIA, George.
Good evening, Tom. K6CIA listening.
Okay, George, glad to have you with us this evening. How about KE6RJ Harry?
Good evening, Tom, and the net, KE6RJ and KE6QI. Thank you.
Harry, Nancy, glad to have both of you out there this evening. Appreciate that. Glad to have you listening in. How about AF6ZJ, Guy in Rosemont? Possibly you'll join in a little bit later. KI6SKN, Chris, Big Bear City. And I've been heard. How about KJ6HZS, Mike?
Evening, Tom and Ned. I'll always be here with you. Could you give a courtesy check-in with my pops, K6EKX? He's on scanner.
All right, Mike. Yeah, we got him checked in right here. Appreciate that. How about KJ6FIL, Mike in Redlands?
Good evening, Tom and the Ned. KJ6FIL down here in Redlands.
Good deal there, Mike. I bet you have no complaints over the weather cooling off a little bit like it has in the last few days. Pretty nice. I have a KF6VH, Bob. and I've been heard. How about KJ6KDL Jim?
KJ6KDL Jim here with Rosemary, KJ6KDK, cooking up a batch of that famous three-alarm chili.
All right, sounds good there, Jim, and glad to have you and Rosemary here this evening. Let's see if W6GZI Frank is out there. Nothing heard. KI6IQA, Kelly.
Good evening. Tom and the rest of the net, and Jim put me in for a double dose of the three alarm there. KI6IQA.
There goes the 10 to 15 pounds. All right. How about K6GBL, Ron in Green Valley? Yeah, nothing heard from Ron this evening. How about 86PL, Harold, Riverside?
Evening, 86PL.
All right, Harold, glad to have you out there. How about K6LCS, Clint in Harupa Valley?
Good evening, Tech Tuesday, Tom, K6LCS.
Hey, Quint, glad to have you with us, and glad you're going to be able to help us out on Tech Tuesdays. Appreciate that. How about W6AWL Art in Sugarloaf or Sun City or wherever he's at?
Yeah, we're sitting here in Sun City. I'm listening. W6AWL.
Okay, Art, yeah, I took a trip off the hill today, and boy, what a temperature difference. But anyway, I don't know. One's too hot, one's too cold. I'm getting that Goldilocks complex, as they call it. How about W6JLM, Judith?
Good evening, Tom and the net. This is W6JLM.
Oh, thanks, Judith, for being out there. How about W6KMM? Is he very far away?
You know, Tom, we just got home from the fundraiser for the Lions Club, and he's parking the car in the garage. So I will check in for him for W6KMM.
Okay, Judith. Yeah, I appreciate that. And, yeah, I got back here not too long ago from down the hill, so it's been a busy day for all of us. Is KI6OHN. John, are you out there? Nothing heard. How about, let's see, for that one, a couple here. K6YNW. Chris, are you out there this evening? And no Chris. Sometimes he checks in a little bit later. W6KBC. Gary. Must be out there cleaning the trees in the forest. KD6LAN, Bill.
Good evening. Yep, we're here. KD6LAN.
Okay, Bill, appreciate you being out there. And I don't know if he's inside eating or out of the shack. WB6PBZ, Ray. And Nathan Heard, and a call out to KJ6BCK, Adam. Who sometimes listens in out there in Garden Grove. And nothing heard. How about AE6CK, Victor? Are you listening in from Santa Fe Springs?
Yes, I do. 73 to everybody.
All right, good evening, Victor. Glad to hear you out there. And let's see, we had W6VO earlier on Echolink. I don't know if he's still there. Brad, are you still out there? Yeah, I guess not. Trying out his new phone. KE6VHM, Frank. And nothing heard. Wonder if this guy's back yet. KA6ROD, Rod. I know he's out on vacation, but he's Gonna be back soon. KJ6DBS, Leon. And nothing heard there. And KB6LTY, Christy checked in earlier, a little early check in for her. AE6TV, Hans, are you out there? And nothing heard. And let's see here. K6YNW, Christy, oh, we got him in here. Alrighty. I think we've got, oh, NQ7RD, Rick, Corona. And no Rick this evening. Alrighty. Well, that's the list as we have it, and we add to and skip over a few don't check in after a while. Are there any other guests who'd like to check in this evening? Please come back to KF6Q Net Control.
I'll give it a shot. KC6NDC, Mobile and El Segundo.
El Segundo, you're hitting here real solid in the repeater. Appreciate that, and glad you could join us this evening. Anybody else out there?
I6SKN, late.
Hello, Mr. Late. I mean, Chris. Hey, glad to have you out there, Chris. Appreciate that. Glad you could join us. That's okay. All righty, anybody else out there? Not a problem. Anybody who can join in any time in our discussion, any questions or comments or suggestions or just about anything out there, just feel free to jump in there. That's perfectly fine. All right. Well, let's see here. Mike, let's get to our DX report and what's been happening out there with the sunspots and DX and solar flares. Oh, my.
Okay, CQDX in Morse code with my call sign. Well, things have been good over the weekend. Let's see, we worked Lithuania with 100 watts. I couldn't get to them with QRP with 5 watts. Central and South America with 5 watts. And with good signal reports all the way around. Lots of contacts to the U.S. With QRP with 5 watts. Seventh area call sign QSO party and the New England QSO party were going on the HF band, so that was a lot of fun, even though DX wasn't really top-notch. Space Weather right now is reporting a sunspot number of 93, which is pretty good, but usually when we're up around there, it takes a few days to get the ionosphere all charged up and working for us. Looks like the sun is going to get pretty active here in the next few days. We're on an upswing cycle again, so hopefully we'll be getting some good conditions and some good DX will come around. But I know there's other people out there who would like to add to this report that have done a little bit better. So back to you, Tom, KF6Q. This is WB6CL.
Okay, Mike. Yeah, I think the auto ID there kind of cut you off there a little bit, but not too bad. That's okay. Well, is there anybody else out there with some more DX information? Please come back.
It's KM.
This is W6GZI. Just check in.
Okay, GZI, stand by 1 second. Glad you could check in. And Chris, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't do a whole lot on HF here this last week. Now, Friday evening, pretty late in the evening, actually, about a little bit before 10 o'clock, I made a contact with a guy in Poland and a guy in Russia, and I heard a few people, a couple guys from Sweden. I could hear them talking. They were carrying on some pretty long QSOs, so I didn't have to break in on with those guys and make contact with them. But then, I guess it was Saturday, Lithuania, which CLZ Mike informed me of. And also that same day on Saturday, contact in Ukraine. Costa Rica, I think that's about it. Not a whole lot. Back to you, KI6SKN.
Oh, Roger. Roger that. Well, that's good. Is there anybody else out there or any more information on some DX going on out there?
A question from K6LCF.
Go ahead, Quint.
Gentlemen, is Turkey involved a lot in amateur radio? You guys make a lot of DX contacts with Turkey at all? K6LCF.
You know what? I'm going to send over to Mike first and then back to Chris since there are two key DX people we have out there. Mike, have you done any DX work in Turkey?
Tom, KF6Q, WB6CLZ, Friday. I have never had a QSO with Turkey, neither CW or sideband. I don't know, maybe Chris has. Tom, kick it over to Chris.
Yeah, Chris, have you ever done any DX over there? And I know there was somebody I thought with the club that had, but I'm not sure who it was, and I don't think they're with us tonight. But Chris, have you been able to contact anybody in Turkey or close?
Negative. I've still got a big blank spot, pretty much starting at about Turkey and heading down through Iran, Saudi Arabia. I haven't contacted anything in that area. KI6SKN.
Okay, roger that. Yeah, I guess, Clint, I don't know. I kind of remember hearing somebody out there who might have. Don't recall at the moment. But anyway, well, speaking of Clint, K6LCS, Clint is our guest speaker this evening, and we're going to give him some time element each Tuesday, if he's available, to talk about the ISS and ham satellites, just to keep us up to date what's going on and stuff like that. So after the DX report, which I think we've pretty much covered that, Clint, you want to tell us what's happening out there? K6LCS, KF6Q.
Well, thank you, Tom. A couple positive notes first. NASA managers are telling us that the Endeavour will be blasting off at 8:56 a.m. That's 5:56 a.m. our time on Monday, the 16th. So that'll be good news. You have some more amateurs going up and some more school contacts planned with the folks that are being set up via Endeavour. Break for a second. Not ham-related, but radio-related, communications-related. You all heard that Microsoft bought Skype this morning, and Steve Ballmer of Microsoft guarantees us, he promises us that Mac users and Windows users aren't going to see any drastic changes, so that's the VoIP service. Just watch it. There are alternatives out there, but Skype's been a friend for me, as my wife is in Turkey for 6 weeks. It's been great. Got some AO51 news for you. Break for a second.
Ah, gee, glad to have you out there. All right, we got you in the check-in, so stand by, and back to you, Quint. Go ahead.
AO51 launched in 2004, probably one of the best and easiest to work satellites, best public relations programs for us in the satellite world. Is deteriorating. Its batteries are deteriorating. It had a software crash last week. Several unsuccessful attempts to restore the software, and then have to be given six commands after the software is loaded to get it up and running. There was one report of about 8 hours ago of it being heard. I'm not sure of the source though, but we're not expecting AO51 to live a lot longer. Break. We do have other FM birds you can work. There's 27, 50, 67, and 68. 68 is a Chinese bird, and the command team is going to appear at Dayton. I'll let us know what's going on with it. It's been off for a couple months for North American passes. Both 67 from South Africa and 68 are not primarily amateur radio birds, but they do have amateur radio equipment on them. And, of course, the ISS, North ISS. So AO51 is deteriorating on us. Keep it programmed and monitor it, and you'll be one of the last few folks to maybe work it if the batteries are as bad as we think they are. And I've got just one more note. The amateur satellite that's on board the ISS is called the Eris ARISSAT 1, ARISSAT 1. Did indeed have a battery failure on April 12th when it was supposed to be activated. The Russians tell us that about 7 to 10 days before expected deployment in July, they will recharge that battery. It's a common battery for them. It's the same battery used in their spacesuits, so they do have the charging equipment on board. But about a week, week and a half, they're going to charge it and then test it on board again and see if it's going to work for that project. The project's only expected to last a couple months after they deploy it, after they push it out of the ISS. So that's the next deployment of an Amateur satellite. What's in the works? We have AMSAT Fox, which is going to be another FM bird, still raising money for it. So that's all I've got tonight, Tech Tom, K6LCS.
Okay, Quint, got a couple questions I'm going to send your way just to kind of enlighten some of the people out there. Now, the ISS, just watching a little thing there about insulation on modern marvels in the last hour here. They were talking about the insulation and different things they use on the ISS. They made a statement that the ISS does an orbit of about 16 times a day. Does that sound about right?
Well, the birds at 450 miles up are every 2.5 hours, so that sounds right, because they're half the height, half the elevation. So, yeah, they do go over several times and in different patterns for us. We're used to the FM birds being sun synchronous and hitting the poles, going either south and north or north and south. But you'll see the ISS streak across the sky in different angles.
Yeah, roger that. And the ISS is basically, how high up is that?
I thought 235, and I to be honest with you, I cannot tell you where I think that number was in my brain. They just had to alter orbit last week. They went up about a mile or two, or a kilometer or two. So if you're going to thinking of working the ISS, that's the Keplerian data you should update every week. If you're just working the non-manned amateur satellites, you can update your Keplerian data once a month. But if you're thinking of watching or working the ISS, update that data every week because the ISS is maneuverable.
Okay, roger that. Now, does the ISS have any repeaters on it like the other ham birds do, or is it strictly the only time that you would actually do any communications would be directly to them, and that, I believe, is scheduled, correct?
No, there is a Kenwood TMD-700 on board that got messed up somehow a little over a year ago. It was set up for crossband repeat. Amateur radio just is not a number one priority. Almost all the astronauts are indeed hams, and they love the hobby, they love talking to us. But getting someone up there to reprogram that just has not been scheduled any time. Look for that to change, though, in the next 3 months. There might be an opportunity to reprogram it. But there is a TMD-700 on board. And watch NASA TV and NASA flight plans for spare time for a couple of the folks. Katie just talked to a school yesterday, wonderfully successful. I think 19 questions were asked and answered. But every once in a while, they'll just be on in that chamber or that area of the ISS and talk to us on the 2-meter simplex channel.
Well, that's fantastic, and I think what we were just talking about, the fact that it does pass or orbits about 16 times around the Earth, and I'm going to guess it's probably a couple of times or more that it passes overhead here, possibly even during the day. Of course, we don't see it because it's up there. Of course, it doesn't glow in the dark because it's not dark. So anyway, and then, Quint, another thing, too. Now, AO-51, that's kind of dying out. Now, even that's about 11 inches square or something like that?
Oh, one more note for the ISS. Remember, the crew is working on Greenwich Mean Time. So don't just send out a CQ or a QST at 5 o'clock our time in the afternoon because it's midnight for them. They don't sleep near the radios, but just keep in mind they're working GMT. L51, yes, little 11-inch cube up there. All solar panels on the outside, and it's just a deteriorating battery situation. Just imagine partially just charging your radio and charging it 15, 20 times a day. Battery technology is better now than it was 7 years ago, but it's been a wonderful tool for us. Millions of contacts, well, maybe not millions, but many, many thousands of contacts, and showed off in demos and classrooms all over the planet. AL51's been a great friend to amateur radio.
Okay, Roger that. Maybe I can answer a question before it's asked here. That AO51 and a lot of the LEOs are about, and that's a ballpark number, of 500 miles out. And with the ISS at 235 miles, well, for you and me down here on Earth, that's not that bad a journey, a couple hundred miles, but for them to increase that orbit, that'd be almost impossible. For the shuttle to make a special trip to pick it up would be a financial crunch that nobody would ever want to admit to. So unfortunately, yeah, there's others out there, too, that have gone by the wayside. So hopefully, you know, we'll have some of the new stuff here to work. So anyway, anything else to add there, Clint, before we get on with our topic? Back to you one more time, Clint, KF6Q, with the Tech Tuesday Net.
K6L says, yeah, don't delete it from your memories. Remember AO16. AO16 was gone for a year, died. Funerals were held, and it came back for several months. Well, no one had any idea. So keep on. Don't delete it for your programming. I'll never delete it for my radios. See what happens here. We don't have a confirmation from the control team of a successful software load yet. But keep it programmed. Keep it programmed, by gosh. And on my site, you'll see a little link to report your whether or not you hear it. That information is very important to the control team. Whether or not it's heard on the West Coast on these passes or not. So, keep it programmed. Keep listening. Thank you, Tom. K6LCS.
Okay, Clint. By the way, Christy, KV6LCY, wanted me to say hello to you. She was unable to listen in this evening and had another meeting to go to. I know she loves working the satellites, too. Well, anyway, and Clint, appreciate you dropping in this evening, and if you can, I think we had talked about you dropping in every Tuesday for a little report and update. I greatly appreciate that. We got a lot of listeners out there, so thanks a bunch. All righty. Well, Mike, WB6CLZ, are you still awake?
Well, not only awake, but really enjoyed that topic on satellites. So, yeah, we're here and we're standing by. Where are we headed?
In our many, many quests for improving, discussing, or even clarifying the great mystery of antennas and feed lines. Anyway, which is a broad subject, and you had mentioned earlier, before we get too involved in any particular thing, your analyzer, and you were looking through the manual, and you said you found some interesting things. Would you like to share?
Yeah, you know, for years and years, I've used SWR meters, and that's about all I've had as far as tuning up antennas, which basically, for those that don't know, an SWR, which stands for standing wave ratio, is the ratio between the forward power and the reflected power, you know, going out to your antenna. And that's really all that little booger does is tell you how much power is going out in the forward and how much is coming back in the reflected. And it gives you a ratio of that and allows you to adjust that portion of your antenna. But, you know, pretty common that hams, I know there's 2, 3, maybe 4 or 5 of those that are available to just about anybody that listens to Tech Tuesday. I know I've got one, and Tom's got one that's on loan to him, and Perry's got one, and, you know, they're available up there. Yeah, an MFJ-259 antenna analyzer. And does a myriad of things. Tom, I'm going to send it back to you, and I'll go further, but I don't know how far you want me to take it.
Yeah, roger that. If I say my signal sounds different, I had to at the old K9 outside. I'm on my HT for just a second. I am using my base set, though. How about that? Anyway, yeah, well, Mike, because we use the analyzer so many times, checking out antennas, checking out coax and things like that, maybe you could just list out a couple. We'll kick them around a little bit of the things that you found that are really interesting. So let's start out with the first thing that you feel that would be really important with our discussion tonight.
Yeah, not only does the analyzer take care of your SWR portion, it's basically a pretty fancy SWR meter, but also, you know, can give you the frequency of the antenna, the resonant frequency of the antenna. It can give you the indication of the resistive part of the load, reactance part of the load, the impedance, the complex impedance, which is what your radio likes to see, is 50 ohms, and that's what we're all shooting for. And a good way to find the actual resonance of the antenna. You know, that's really what we're looking for, is where the antenna is resonant, where the reactance of the antenna is zero or close to zero. You know, and sometimes it's hard to find, that's really what we're looking for. And it might not always be one-to-one SWR. Go ahead and expand on that one, Tom.
Yeah, real briefly there, as all these different numbers and words and things, essentially, we all know the 50 ohms is what our radio likes to see. That's the happy time for everything, and the good one-to-one matches. But AC loads, especially RF loads, have two types of resistance, and one is pure resistance, like a DC resistance, and the other is the reactance part. And at perfect tune of that antenna, that reactance is neutralized out to zero, which leaves the resistance part hopefully at 50. And if it's not exactly 50 at that point, that's where we get into some of the TLTs and balance that will match that out for us. So, but yeah, that's all these different numbers and different things. So yeah, it does way more than SWR. SWR is just a drop in the bucket. Anything else you'd like to add to that, Mike?
I'd like to kind of, you sent me an email and you referred to a couple of water pipes, one in the right hand and one in the left hand. I thought that was an interesting analogy. Maybe you could expand on that and kind of put that out. It makes it easier to visualize kind of what's going on.
Okay, roger that. Yeah, this is going to take quite a few breaths and a couple of resets. But I think water is a good analogy for radio and electricity and all that stuff, because it's something we all understand pretty much, water going through a pipe. And I guess what we would like to see or kind of visualize, this is only an analogy to give those out there who are not familiar with SWR and all that and matching. First off, if you have a meter in there as the SWR meter, it will usually go, if not always, between the radio and the antenna. Now, if you have a tuner, it'll go between the radio and the tuner. And if everything's happy, it would be like if you're the SWR meter, in your left hand you have a half-inch piece of pipe, water pipe. In your right hand you have a half-inch piece of pipe. They're both the same. And if you're the SWR meter in the middle, you say, hey, I like this. They're equal. They're the same. So the flow will be pretty perfect. Let me reset.
Question.
Key, go ahead.
What happens is it make a difference if the pipe is metal or is ABC?
Well, we're only using the pipe as a... basically, it's just an analogy of water flow. So in this case, it wouldn't really matter. We're not using them for antennas. We're just using them for reference in the physical world. And so that's just an analogy there. Now, if, say, you've got one water pipe, let's say, on the right hand is an inch, and that's not the same. So
what we do with this tuner, the tuner that's in line out there, it's kind of like an adapter. It kind of takes one pipe size, brings it down to the other. And that way, so that the Happy Radio and the SWR meter see the same size all the time. This would be that 50 ohms that we're looking for. So the tuner is basically like an adapter. It's actually a transmatch. There's all kinds of names for it. But what that does, it adapts whatever the antenna is. Because the antenna is really the wild card here. Let me reset. The antenna, if it was perfect in a perfect world, would also be that 50 ohms or the same as that half-inch water pipe. And I always say that in reference to water, as we do build them out of pipes but and wires and all kinds of different things. But it usually is not. It will for a little while, but it's just a fact of physics and natural law that it can't be perfect at all frequencies at all the time. So this is where our tuners come in, and, you know, that's how we match all that stuff up. So that's just kind of a real simple analogy for those who are not familiar of what's going on with the SWR meter, the antenna tuner, stuff like that. So for all of you that are familiar, thanks for bearing with me and listening to this kind of fair but probably lacking analogy. Back to you, Mike. Go ahead.
But, you know, understand that, that basically what you're trying to say is that the flow in the water pipe, you know, could be different, and that means that your antenna is different, and what we're trying to do is adjust for that. But what we really would like is on any given frequency that we're trying to be on, say we're at 3935 kilohertz, which is the Big Bear right tubal frequency and the net frequency for the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club, that at that exact frequency, if your antenna is cut for that frequency and everything is perfect, then we're going to see pretty close to one-to-one ratio. We're going to see 50 ohm impedance, you know, a zero reactance, which means it's resonant, and that's what we're looking for. But as we move up or down in frequency, that's going to change, and that's why you use your antenna tuner. But if you have a frequency that you always work on, or like you're a net control or something like that, adjust it for that frequency, and that will be perfect on that frequency. You don't need an antenna tuner. You can run an amp and, in a perfect world. That's what we're looking for.
Yeah, roger that. And that's all, you know, that's all and good. And that's actually our technical explanation there. So, well, another thing here, too, before we leave the copper pipe here, and this is something that is probably not debate, but there's always somebody with one opinion and another opinion. So we're going to just briefly talk about a couple of different antennas. And is one better than the other, or what's actually going on there? So, Mike, I did some research on that, and we're talking about the infamous G5RV versus the dipole versus the ZS6BKW. And we'll just leave the loop out of it for the moment. But I have some information, and let's go with what you found out first. Go ahead.
I'll tell you what I know, but I did not, we had one of those days again, and so I did not have time to really research that. We've gone about as far as we've researched. Well, it all depends on what you're using the antenna for. Like basically, like I stated, you know, they're all good antennas, and they're all going to work, you know, but it depends on what is your favorite band. You know, the G5RV is a great antenna. ZS6BKW is a great antenna. A little bit different frequency response on them. One's optimized version, but both of them work well. It just depends on what band you're working on and you know, what your height above ground, and perfect ground, that is. But go ahead, Tom. I didn't really have time to get any research on that tonight.
Yeah, roger that. Well, you know, the match is important with the water pipe. If it's not matched up or lined up, you know, no matter how much pressure you have out there, it's just not going to act right. You're not going to get what you want. And radio is a lot like that. Before we get into the details of these two or three antennas, you got to visualize a couple things first. If it's raining outside and you put a 5-gallon bucket out there, eventually that 5-gallon bucket is going to fill up if you have enough rain, and you're going to have 5 gallons. If you put 3 5-gallon buckets out there all next to each other, they're all going to fill up probably at the same rate because it's all the same water coming down through the sky. If it rains enough, all 3 will fill up. However, now you're going to have 15 gallons of water, not 5. And why is that? Well, because you're capturing more of what's coming out of the sky. And radio is the same way. We have electromagnetic waves. Let me reset. And these waves are propagating towards us, no matter where we're at. And as they come at you, the thing that's going to capture them, the 5-gallon bucket, per se, is wire or an element, a piece of pipe, whatever it is that's acting as your antenna. If you have more wire or material, and this is just a basic rule of thumb, you're going to capture more of that magnetic field. That magnetic field, when it passes through copper by a law of physics, turns into electricity in microvolts, but it's there, and this is what comes down to our radio. Let me reset. So obviously, if we had the space, the bigger the wire, were the more microvolts we're going to capture. However, that's the antennas are a trade-off. And, we've got the G5RV, we've got the ZS6, BKW, loops, things like that. They all have one major feature, is that how big are they? Number one, a loop. Mike, how big is your loop in Big Bear? I mean, physically, how long is that wire?
Now it's about 420 feet long, because that's what fits, and it's really not resonant in many bands. I mean, any particular area of the band, but we use the tuner, and it works pretty well. Very nice for receiving with capture, a nice capture area. But we can tune it to just about any frequency we need.
All right, because of its size, too, though, I think the bandwidth is extremely wide. I think that's one of the gains. Of course, the downside is you have to have real estate. You got to have space for this thing. So over the period of time, just like the dipole, we'll just stick with 80 meters for the moment, 75, 80-meter band, whichever you want to call it. Essentially, you're going to have 120-foot-long wire. That's pretty long. If you put it in an inverted V, sure, it's going to shorten up. So the first compromise is the G5RV, which is only 103, designed basically around the 20-meter band, by the way. It's one and a half wavelengths at 20 meters. That was its key design frequency. But it works on many different bands. Let me reset. KF6Q here on Tech Tuesday on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater every Tuesday, 1900 hours. So as we move into another modification, the ZS6BKW is approximately 90 feet. With that in mind, it's smaller yet, but also will fit in a smaller space. It's all about what you can fit with where you have, what room you have. So as you go, all of these, and Mike, I got to tell you, did some research. Well, of course, we're shrinking the wire from a dipole to this to that. As far as gain, and people out there reporting gain, they're as bad as the manufacturers. Let me reset. I had articles that had the two next to each other listed out, and for whatever reason, the G5RW always had more gain than the ZS6BKW. And then another gentleman, it was different because the key point here is what exact frequency are they testing at? Because no matter what, the two antennas, unless they're actually matched per band the same, they're all going to be different. So gain to gain, all I can say is that a bigger wire will get you a bigger signal, but you got to fit what you got to fit. And that's the best thing that works. And they're both good five banders. Mike, I think, what would you have to say about your loop? It's an all bander also.
Yeah, I've used the ZS6 BKW. I have used a 75 meter dipole, about the same height, and I have used the loop. There are signals at the height that I have, which is only about 30 feet, that on my ZS6 BKW I can barely hear them, where on the loop with the greater capture area, at about the same height, they're about 2 to 3 S units louder.
You know, and that's all that is that. You've got more magnetic field hitting more copper, which is going to transverse into more electrical signal. It's just a law of physics. It's a fact. And that's good. But I think for a lot of us, we've even used verticals. What's one of the main advantages of a vertical, Mike? I mean, the thing is straight up. So if you actually lived in an apartment and nobody complained, you could put that out there in your balcony, correct?
And a lot of people do, yeah. And the nice thing about a vertical for DX work, it's a very low angle of radiation. So when your signal is hitting that ionosphere, it goes out further and has a better chance of DX. Disadvantage of a vertical is you've got to have radial. You've got to have a very good ground plane on that thing to really get them to work well.
Yeah, roger that. And, of course, we can always be creative with that. There's a lot that can be done there. So it's all about trade-off. And I know that everybody out there is going to have their own opinion about which is the best. But the best is whatever works the best for you with where you're at. That's the most important thing. I've got probably the shakiest-looking 75-meter dipole that anybody would ever want to see. But I can use it. I've used it on 6 meters. It works. It's not the greatest, but, you know, it's because it's basically a 75-meter dipole. But it works. It does okay. So until I get something else better, hey, it lets me check in. So anyway, anybody else out there with any questions or comments, please come back because this is an open net. Go ahead.
Howdy, you've been listening a little late. Enjoying it, K6YNW.
And there's Chris, another Chris. We have two Chrises out there. Glad you could join us. Yeah, we always call your name out. Sometimes you're there, sometimes you're not, but that's okay. And Chris, where are you looking?
Sky Valley, northeast of Palm Springs, K6YNW.
Okay, roger that. Yeah, and good signal always coming in the repeater. Anyway, but that's essentially, Mike, I'll let you comment on this in a minute, but I know that we've had a lot of different testing we've done, and it's really hard to compare some of these antennas because no matter what you do, if the heights aren't the same, if the balun isn't the same, if the ground air, you know, just the grounding here in Sugarloaf, we're over granite or quartz or something here, you know, it's not going to be the same as if you were out there where Chris is, right next to the water. Sorry, SKN, I had to say that. But, yeah, or down there, Mike, where you're at in Placentia. I mean, the soil's different down there, so it's all going to be different. So let me reset. So no matter where you're at, I mean, to do actual good comparing antennas, you almost need to be out there in the middle of the desert someplace where they're all equal and spend some time, and hey, Chris, there you go. That's what we can use those 40 acres for. Any comments, please come back. KF6Q.
TUX.
TUX, Key, how you doing?
Very well, thank you. I came back from Palm Spring. I had the complete physical examination from head to toes. Next Friday, they are going to go up you know where. Visit my lower intestine, my upper intestine, and go way up to my liver. And they will let that snake out. Thanks God I'll be asleep. And they are going to see what's going on. But my cancer is doing fine. I'm doing fine. Question. I have a rod going about 6 feet underground next to my house with the lead going to my radio. Now, if I attach that rod to my PVC pipe or go to my well or go 265 underground, will it help as a ground rod? Over. First question.
Well, I'd have to say if your pipe well is PVC, then it's probably not gonna have any continuity there unless it's full of water at the time. And of course, water will conduct. And that would work. Going down deep like that certainly cannot hurt. I know most of us have a ground rod that's 6 to 8 feet long, and sometimes we have a couple of them. I think George, KA6CIA, had made a good note to us last year when we were talking about grounding that, there's areas like up here in Sugarloaf, I don't care how many ground rods you put in, it'll be eight up here could be worse than just one by itself over in Baldwin Lake. So I guess it all depends if there's a water continuity or metal continuity down there, and yes, it would help. Go ahead.
Second question. If I have an antenna of this very windy where I am, it's pretty high. The last two winters ago exactly, my antenna bent down on half like a spaghetti and finally broke. If I reinforce that antenna with a piece of PVC, I put the antenna inside of a PVC to reinforce it, it will stop the frequency to come in, or the audio, or anything, or it improve to help the antenna to not bend. Over.
If you have an antenna, and if you're even talking about the mast, or even if you're talking about just part of the antenna itself, that's metal, and you're putting PVC inside just to reinforce it, essentially the PVC is an insulator. The antenna is not even going to know it's there electronically or radio-wise, but physically, of course, it's going to strengthen it up. So it would help it physically straighten it up, and it won't. Should not hurt anything. There's a little bit of what they call a dielectric effect with the PVC. Not to worry about, not that big a deal, not going to hamper or change frequencies that much. So just wherever you're piecing things back together, just make sure that the two pieces of pipe are electrically connected, with a couple wires or physically welded back. So back to you.
It will not be inside the antenna, be inside of the PVC, which is aluminum. It will be inside of the PVC. Over.
Okay, now I've heard that we were doing some work a couple of years ago with collinears, which is basically what they call a radome. A radome is basically just a fiberglass or plastic outer covering for a vertical antenna. The antenna itself might just be a wire, or it could be pipe, it could be anything. And I know that the radome, being PVC or fiberglass, can slightly alter the tuned frequency of it, but I think in your case, I don't think that's an issue. Even on the outside, I don't think it's an issue. The slight difference in center frequency of the antenna, you'll probably never notice.
Thank you very much for the comment, and I sure do appreciate it. And I hope you have the chance, like you said, to come sometime and help me with my challenger. K60UX, thank you very much. I bet you're a wonderful guy who are very, very knowledgeable, and I sure do appreciate. And I know that a lot of people do appreciate all your comments on Tuesday evening.
Well, I appreciate that, and Mike does also there, Guy, because quite often we try to at least overlap. If one has a busy day, then the other tries to do a little research ahead of time. And trust me, it's all about research we do. So anyway, Chris, SKN, or if you're still out there, by the way, with being that close to the water, how's your grounding rods out there?
Found I really don't need any grounding rods here. Just everything's just too good.
Okay, roger that. I just had to, I had to ask that. And that's good. Well, anyway, anybody else out there, any questions? Obviously, we're just kind of giving some brief information out there on some SWR and antennas and stuff like that. But as we work into the next this summer, we're going to, you know, just re-go over a couple of things. If you've been listening for some time out there on Tech Tuesday, you'll probably hear the, some of the same stuff. And we'll try to put some new stuff in with it. But just stuff to help people out there trying to get equipment set up. And if you're a ham for many years, love to have you listening anyway, because some of the times we miss something. And that's, those are the people I want to call us on it. Get out there. Tell us where we screwed up. Anybody else out there, comments, questions, or suggestions, please come back.
Quick comment, Tom.
Go ahead.
Hey, regarding Dee's question number one, DX Engineering, for people that live in like HOAs and where they have a restricted environment, they recommend that you can enclose their vertical, some of their vertical antennas in PVC with no ill effects. They even recommend disguising it as a flagpole by putting it in PVC. So that is something that is a very viable option. The other thing is, Chris and I kick back and forth, DX, you'll hear us on 2 meter on this repeater saying, oh boy, there's a DX station here and there. And there are, you know, with my loop, there are stations that I cannot even hear, I can't copy them, where Chris, with his ZS6BKW, is working them. So, I mean, it all depends on, you know, your application, where your DX is located. Chris's antenna is a lot higher than mine. I mean, it works so much better. In some applications, that, like I say, I can't even hear the station. So, yeah, it's just where you're located. It's the height of your antenna, that nice ground that he's got, being close to water and that sort of thing. So, anyway, just a quick comment there.
Good point there. Glad to hear that from a manufacturer. And you know what you're saying there as far as your loop and his antenna. I guess the best way to explain it would be if you've ever hit a baseball with a bat, and at that one particular time you hit what they call the sweet spot, where it just felt so perfect and effortless, but the ball just traveled forever. Or the same thing with a golf ball and a golf club. You'll have that same perfect swing. Everything just comes together. Well, antennas have that sweet spot. There's quite a few if it's a multi-band antenna. And if that one station out there is right there at one of the sweet spots of that of his ZS6BKW, and I say that his because his is going to be a little bit different than probably one right down the street, just little this's and that's, minor things, but that sweet spot right there, it's going to operate fantastic. And hopefully that's where he's doing a lot of DXing, you know. So that's probably a good explanation of the why, you know. So anyway, that's why it's very nice if you can have multiple antennas, but how many of us can do that, you know? So they're all good trade-offs to have one good all-bander, and I think they're both good antennas, but I think the ZS6 has probably got it hands down if you're looking at inverted V's. Anybody else out there with comments? All right. Well, in closing, Mike, anything else you'd like to add before we close the net?
Well, that's what I can pull right off the top of my head. Good net. I always like discussing antennas. And hopefully we'll keep talking about it and schedule a workshop here in the near future. Back to you, Tom. It's WB6CLZ.
Okay, roger that. And I cannot go without saying, definitely appreciate K6LTS, Clint, out there. Excellent information. Look forward to having you join us every week if possible, or whenever you can. That's good too. So appreciate that. Quint, anything else you'd like to add? I think he said his part and he left us. Oh well. Anyway, good deal. So appreciate everybody listening in. Always love all the comments and questions and things like that. So if anybody out there has tried to reach me through my ARRL website, ARRL's got it all messed up. So, hopefully it'll be up and running here again in about a day or so. Alrighty, QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net. Closing the net at 2000 hours, right on the dot. And returning the repeater for normal use. Thank everybody again for listening in. Please join us again next week. And KF6Q will be clear.